Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Asked by Ayana. I am very excited for today's episode. I feel like I say that every week. I was telling our guest before we started recording that I was just looking over her bio thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk to her. I am joined by Tenoria Askew, who is a personal chef, food creative, public speaker, podcast co-host, and racial injustice change maker. She does it all. And her journey of becoming a personal chef and food creative is such an interesting one. I'm so glad that she agreed to come on the show. Thanks so much, Tenoria.
Thank you so much for having me. When you kind of rattled off all of my different things that I do, and I'm like, yeah, and I used to be like a corporate trainer.
Which is wild
list of things.
Okay, so let's start there. I want to hear about, you can share as much or as little as you want, sure. But I'd love to hear how you ended up in maybe your first corporate job and like what your career goals were.
Yeah. So my first like real corporate job where I thought I was really cool because I used a fax machine for the first time was working for a local credit union here in Indiana. And it was supposed to be just like my part-time summer job in between college. And I stayed because I liked it so much because it was cool to like, you know, do things on the computer and click clack and do the fax machine and process things. And I definitely felt like there were growth opportunities there, and I stayed at that job for 15 years, but I know now, looking back, that it was absolutely me doing what was expected of me. Like, yes, go to college, establish a career, get married, do all of those things. And it was easy. Number one, it was easy. I didn't even challenge myself, let alone challenge the status quo. And I was comfortable and cozy and I was growing. I got promoted a lot. So yeah, my first corporate job was my longest standing job of 15 years.
I love what you said about doing what was expected of you. Mm-hmm. I've shared before on the show, but I feel like I almost had I don't want to say a smugness, but just maybe like a really intense, like, oh, I'm so glad that I know what I'm doing with my life. And so I was very quickly humbled when I was like, this might take a turn that I did not anticipate.
Yeah.
So you forged out on your own. What was that like?
I had no clue what I was doing.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So my journey for becoming an entrepreneur and leaving my corporate job was an interesting one. I was probably unhappy with my job, but very, very loyal to my boss for probably the last 5 years that I was at the credit union. And I was going through life changes in that I was leaving an abusive marriage. I was trying to figure out who I was again. And so all of these different things were transpiring. But as I was trying to figure out who I was again, my friends encouraged me to go on the television show MasterChef, hosted by Gordon Ramsay. And I did. And I was very confident in competition, which I don't consider myself a competitive person. But I was very confident in that. I was very confident that it was going to change my life. And I was convinced that it was all or nothing, that I was going to get to leave my job. And knowing timing and the progression of things, it was the right thing to do. But the plan that I had in place was not well thought out. Just thinking about financial responsibilities, thinking about how to actually build a business, actually like wrapping my head around what does business growth look like? What does sustainability look like? I didn't even know what those things meant for a business, let alone had I had them well thought out. And so when I left my corporate career, it was just kind of the right timing because of needing to make public appearances and my schedule needing to be flexible to kind of ride the MasterChef wave of things. But when the MasterChef wave started to die down, it was like, oh, I'm solely responsible for maintaining this. I have to stay relevant. And so that was in 2016. I think until about 2020, 2021 is really where I felt like I got my stride. And I feel confident to say that I am a business owner. I made a career shift. Even being confident enough for you to call me a chef or to call me an author or to call me a public speaker, I'd be like, I do those things, but that's not who I am. Now I can own it.
I love that. We're going to go back to MasterChef, which I'm sure that everyone makes you go over, because I think that that's so cool. That I feel like I learned very quickly that this like false humility that worked for me in previous jobs of like, oh no, I'm not all that. Like, no, like I don't deserve that promotion. Are you sure? Like when you're like your own boss, your own PR person, your own advocate, you don't have the luxury of being like, oh, like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with you calling me that.
Yeah.
Especially as Black women, you know what I mean? 100%. Like we really do have to just own it, which, so I love that you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But MasterChef, you did very well on MasterChef, which I feel like you glossed over that part, that you not only went on MasterChef, but you impressed Gordon Ramsay and did an amazing job. What was that like?
It was like adult prison day camp. I say that in the sense that we were like sequestered, like, if you're doing like a high profile case for like jury duty, you
right.
don't talk to your friends and family. You don't get like the freedoms of the outside world. We got to see the news on the TV in our hotel room, but like I had no idea what was going on with my own personal surroundings, my people. And you don't get to keep your cell phone and people are driving you everywhere. You can't just call an Uber. But at the same time, you're immersed with people who are just as passionate about a subject matter as you. Like,
mm-hmm.
we talked about food all the time. And being around food, having an opportunity to be exposed to lots of different ingredients, just being on the West Coast versus me being in the Midwest, that I didn't have access to. Being around professionals who have studied under Gordon Ramsay and Christina Tosi and gleaning from them. It's life-changing. It really is. Being a part of any kind of reality television show, especially where it's a learning opportunity, it really is up to you what you make of it. You could get caught up in the whole entertainment aspect of it, or you can be like, okay, I'm here to take all of this and keep all of this in this little tool belt of mine and do something with it. And I just chose to do something with it.
I know that you have a cookbook that you sent to me. I think time is a blur now. I'm going to say a couple years ago. It could be more recent than that.
I actually had to look it up. I was like, oh, I did write a book in 2021. Okay, not last year.
All a blur. But the thing that I love about your approach to cooking is that it's not intimidating and it's doable. I talk to a fair amount of recipe creators and chefs on the show, and I freely admit that I'm just in awe of people who are able to do it. When I am in the kitchen, I'm looking at a recipe, like even my husband will be like, you don't need to do that. I will be there with like the measuring spoon, like, all right, this is how much garlic powder goes in. I cannot like listen to my heart and cook like every single thing.
Yeah.
So it does not come naturally to me. So I love it. Like, I love having resources that aren't overwhelming or super complicated to mm-hmm. me. So mm-hmm. I would love to hear more about the cookbook and just like how you learned to cook, your approach to it, all of it.
So I've been cooking since I was 6 years old. I say I come from the Culinary Institute of my parents and grandparents. My
Ooh,
mom and my grandma and my aunties, they all were the cooks in the family. And so being that we're from Tennessee, but we moved to Indiana when I was 3 years old, we traveled back and forth to Tennessee a lot, and it was always centered around some kind of food celebration, whether that was a holiday, anniversary or birthday, or even a funeral. There was always food, and my grandmother was being one of the deacon's wives. I think she was a deaconess, too. I don't remember, but she was always one that was responsible for preparing the food, serving the food. If someone passed away or had a baby, she was making the food. And I just realized that's how you built community. I was like, oh, this is how you make friends. And with us being a transplant family, we met other transplant families. And when we didn't go back to Tennessee for holidays, we spent it with them. It was always at our house. My parents were always doing the bulk of the cooking. So I just connected those dots. And the more and more I got in the kitchen, the more and more I realized the kitchen is one place where I thrive. Even if I'm messing up, I know how to recover. I feel the most confident in the kitchen. And so in my corporate career, it was just, you know, a way to relax and release. But the more and more I started thinking, I want to quit my job and use my 401k to open a food truck. The more and more those thoughts kept coming in, the more and more I realized, okay, I can make a career out of this. And so I did. I say that I created my dream job, although I don't dream to work. But Staples Plus Five is kind of like pulling in all the inspiration from my grandma, my mom, even my time on MasterChef, and my time of being in the kitchen when I was at work or when I was working and didn't really want to be there. It's like a culmination of all of those things. And it all centers around when I have the basic ingredients in my pantry, flour, sugar, pasta, canned tomatoes, canned beans, butter, bacon. When I have the things that I consider staples, I can do anything. I can do anything after a long day of work. I can do anything to feed my loved ones. I could do anything to compete on MasterChef. That's really what Staples Plus Five is.
I follow someone who says food is love all the time. And I feel like that is just so true. I think that the reason that I love so much the way that you approach it is because even like cooking dinner every night is a privilege. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you'll see recipes where it's calling for like a ridiculous amount of things where, you know, just time, money, everything. Mm-hmm. So I feel like keeping it simple is so helpful. What does your family think about what you're doing for a living?
Oh gosh. My mom is just, it's gotten to the point where it's awkward. God love her. But like every time we talk, she's like, I'm just so proud of you. I'm like, Mom, you told me that yesterday.
Oh.
Thank you so much. And my brother is just kind of like, growing up, I was Ask You Sister because my brother is older than me. He played football. Clearly we went to the same high school together for a short period of time. We went to the same college. So I was just known as Eric's little sister. And now he's Tenoria's brother. And so it's kind of fun. I think he gets a kick out of it. So yeah, it's really cool to be able to really carry my family's legacy, but also taking the unbeaten path, choosing to quit my job and pursue entrepreneurship, going on my whole deconstruction of faith journey, just kind of living life on my own terms and really getting to the point in adulthood where that made sense. And I recognized that that was a good thing and a healthy thing has definitely been interesting for my family. By no means have they discouraged it or made me feel bad, but it's definitely felt like there were times where like, they just don't get it. They really yeah. don't get it. And then I come out on the other side and they're like, oh, okay. So yeah, they're wildly supportive with question marks from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that. Well, I think that it's also, they, like now I feel like it's more common to have like a non-traditional job or to build your own mm-hmm. thing, right? But mm-hmm. still, it's so much easier, I feel like, especially for like our parents' generation to be like, oh, like she works at a bank, or like for me, she works at a newspaper. Like that's so much simpler to explain to their friends than like, well, here are all the different things that she does, all the things she dabbles in. It's so yeah, funny.
One of my favorite questions, especially from the older generation, is, so you do that all the time? Like, so that's how you make money.
Right. They're like, what's your real job? Yeah, I get that all the time. Yeah. Okay, gosh. It's yeah. so funny. I am curious what an average, if there is such a thing as an average day, I feel like a lot of times there isn't, but just like how what your schedule looks like and like how you decide how much time to devote to each different mm-hmm. part of your
I feel like company. The best way to kind of describe the average work-life balance really for me is to talk about the average week. Mondays are typically an admin day for me. I meet with my assistant. We kind of talk about what's going on for the week and, you know, delegate tasks and things like that. every other Tuesday, I appear on the local news here. Wow. In Indiana. And so I just did that this morning. So that's, you know, getting ready for that. And then other things, usually because I'm like done up for the day on Tuesdays. I'm like, let me get all the things where I need to look cute on Tuesdays.
I feel that.
What I'm trying to do. And then Wednesdays and Thursdays can vary. Like tomorrow's supposed to be a content day for me, but I have not been inspired to create content lately. Meetings with clients. I am also a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. So I have clients that I consult with, whether that be facilitating training or meeting with their leadership or meeting with their head of their diversity councils and things like that. And then typically on Thursdays and Fridays, if I have a dinner party, because most of my dinner parties are on weekends. So typically on Thursdays and Fridays, I am prepping to go to a dinner party. I've probably got to make a cheesecake and go grocery shopping and get my prep list and things like that. So that's typically what a week looks like. If I don't have a dinner party, then I am free as a bird come Friday.
I love how you break it down. And I also love that you build in time for yourself and, you know, your different projects. I wanted to ask you about your DEI work because I feel like that's such an interesting part of what you do. I'm always curious how the summer of 2020 was for you.
Yeah.
It's like such a loaded question, but especially for you in your space.
Love that question.
I'm curious. Just tell me whatever you're willing to share about all of it.
So I was a diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioner in my corporate career. And while I really wanted it to be my primary and only job in that space, I fought to get one little bullet point in my job description. And that's one of the reasons why I knew it was time for me to quit that job and pursue entrepreneurship, is because the day I came back after being gone for 2.5 months filming MasterChef, I found out that they were restructuring and DEI was leaving our department. And I was like, okay, Lord, I hear you. No.
That's the sign. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that in the corporate space, facilitated training, met with leadership, kind of managed the diversity council that we had in the organization. And honestly, that was in 2016 when I quit my full-time job. I was also hosting things called Unity Tables. And I got this from a conference that I went to where women of all walks of life sat down and shared their faith and talked about racial reconciliation. And at that conference, and knowing what I did in my corporate career, I was like, I want to do that. And while the church that I was going to at the time tried to make it their own thing, I was like, no, it's mine. And so in 2016, I just took a break from all of it. It was election year. And actually my last Unity table was right after that election. And I was like, nah, I'm not bearing this weight. So I took a break. And then about 2018, 2019, I was also trying to establish my business and figure out entrepreneur and all. So it made sense. But 2018, 2019, I got invited to talk on panels, speak on podcasts, keynote speeches, lots of different interviews and articles. And my journey as a Black woman always came up. Part of the reason why it always came up is because I wasn't shying away from it, but also it's because people knew I talked about it. And so I just recognized that every time I was on someone's platform, race and racial reconciliation was always coming up. And so I was like, okay, well, if someone's going to ask me to relive my trauma, I'm going to get paid for it.
Yes.
So when 2020 and the murder of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, when that whole time frame took place, I was being very vocal on social media because I had already been vocal on stages and platforms. So it was not challenging for me to be vocal. It was just, I didn't know how it would be received, but I also just didn't care.
Yeah.
And so it ended up being received really, I still very rarely get pushback. I get a lot of people who want to be allies or think they're allies asking me for more information. And while I was giving that away freely, I realized that I needed to stop that. I had already started working with some churches even prior to that. And so I really developed my DEI consultation really in 2019, but it just kind of blew up in 2020. And since then, I've had several clients I facilitated. I even tied into cooking because I do feel like food is a great connector. It is a bridge builder. It is so cross-cultural that I even started doing cooking demonstrations that tie in Black food culture and helping people understand that your obsession with sweet potatoes is really because of West Africans bringing it over when they were enslaved, not because it just magically grew out of American soil. And just having those conversations. So I have been doing that actively as a part of my business. So I have Tenori's Table, I have Tenori's Table Consulting. I have been doing that actively really since 2019, but 2020 is really where I could establish it as like a real entity and its own business. What 2020 meant for me, honestly, all of the things that took place are disgusting and gross and traumatizing and life-altering. But when I think about the amplification of Black voices, the only thing that really sticks out to me for myself, for my peers, for all of this amazing Black talent that's out there is it's about damn time. Like, I hate that that's what had to, I hate that COVID had to happen. Because honestly, if we weren't in a pandemic and sheltering in place, the murder of George Floyd would have just went right under the radar.
Yes.
The murder of Breonna Taylor, we would not still be fighting for justice for Breonna Taylor. It people would have right. just said out of sight, out of mind. Like, yes, I'm grateful for social media and videos and things like that. But even with that, it still would not be as loud as it is now if it weren't for us sitting with it in a pandemic. But because of the pandemic and because of the sacrifice of life that George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and the multitude of other innocent Black people who have lost their lives, it has amplified us. And it's like, really, this is what had to happen? Like, I already knew I was awesome.
Yeah.
But now everyone on the gram and, you know, everyone on TikTok and all these different places want to amplify our voices, but only amplify it to the limit that they're comfortable at. So yes. It's like, wow, I saw the algorithm shift. I saw my analytics shift through my email subscribers, through social media. I got invited to so many different things to talk. And man, I was getting so much free white guilt money. Like the amount yes. of people that just randomly sent me Venmo. And I'm like, I don't even know you, but thanks. Yeah, that is definitely dwindled. That is definitely shied away. The people who posted those Black boxes, they should just delete it because I don't want to go back in their history and see it now. So yeah, for me as a Black woman, as a business owner, as someone who has been doing justice work for a while now, I honestly feel like it's a shame, but it's about damn time. That's how I feel about it.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience. I can I can relate to so much of it. I had so many media inquiries and so many like brand inquiries that I was literally having to turn away things because there weren't enough hours in the day.
Yep.
And I completely agree with what you said, that it really had to happen in a time where we were all at home glued to our TVs with nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Because it's happened since then.
Absolutely.
And the level of attention is so much, you know, less than it was. It's like we needed it. It all kind of just like this. I don't want to say the stars aligned because obviously it was all terrible, but like I guess the circumstances just aligned in a way that people had to pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love that you, as you said, you know, decided to get paid for your labor. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that I struggled a lot with and still struggle with, that if someone messages me, whether it's in good faith or not, I still feel like, well, maybe I should take the time. But I honestly had a moment where I realized I was like, these people, all white, obviously, but these people could Google some of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Like some of this stuff is not like, I'm going to have a special answer on it. If yep. you're messaging me to say, hey, can you explain why this is offensive? I'm like, no, I can't actually. Mm-hmm. But it took me a longer than it should have to reach that point. So I really value your perspective because I think that that's so important.
Yeah, it's people like Lovey Ajayi Jones, Rachel Rogers, Bozema St. John, those three brilliant Black women, and following them on social media and hearing their stories and recognizing that they are regular, degular people.
Yes.
They are just ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I'm like, wait, I am too.
Yeah.
And realizing that they do not shy away, especially as women and as Black women, talking about getting your coin, making yes. the money, and not being afraid of it because we are deserving of it.
Yeah.
Their influence is what helped me shift and realize that. And also my therapist, like, I've been working with the same Black woman who is my therapist since 2020, and she's such auntie vibes. I just want to sit on the front porch with her and drink a margarita. but she helped me uncover how much my body was holding on to trauma and like some of the chronic pain that I have that I was attributing to my job. Or attributing to shifting careers from sitting behind a desk to being in the kitchen. And really, it's from trauma.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, if I'm allowing, I can't allow or unallow trauma, but if I am wearing this trauma and it is sitting in my body, someone's going to pay me for that pain.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I landed.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. Well, I'm glad for it. I feel like your voice is needed, and I'm super grateful for the work that you do. And I'm so glad that you agreed to come on the show. I feel like I'm like just hanging out with a friend.
Yes. I feel that way when I see you on social media. I'm like, yep, I identify with that. Just so much of your story and so much of your journey and the vulnerability that you've shared. I'm like, yeah, me too, girl.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot to me. It's, as you know, it can be a slog sharing online. Sometimes I get overwhelmed and I'm like, these people know so much about me and I know nothing about them. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just be like people will like, not, this is not like a frequent occurrence, but a couple of times people have like sought me out to be like, oh, like, you know, I love following you. And I'm like, you know what I ate for breakfast this morning?
Yes.
Yes. And, which is not their fault or anything bad, obviously. It's just like such a weird job to have, you know?
It is. Anytime I go to an event now, especially locally, because Indiana has such a great community of people who support each other in the food space, in the Black creative space. And so when I go places and like, I'm like, I don't even get to network anymore because people know who I am when I walk in. And it's just, it honestly just takes me back because they'll walk up to me and like rattle off things about me. And I'm like, I don't even know your name.
Right. It's such a funny dynamic. Yeah. It's weird, but it's fun. Well, where can people find you and connect with you? I'll like type it all out in the show notes, but I wanted you to say it as well.
Of course. So I am Tenoria's Table everywhere. It is one N, two R's in my name, but website, social media, all the social media platforms is Tenoria's Table. You can buy my book, Staples Plus Five, on my website or anywhere that cookbooks are sold. And I have a podcast myself. It's called Black Girls Eating. It's a conversation about sisterhood, justice, and well-seasoned food. People think because it's Black Girls Eating, all we talk about is food. Our episode that dropped today was about grief. We talk about everything. So you can find that everywhere at Black Girls Eating.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Asked by Ayana. I hope that you enjoyed the listen. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast, taking the time to leave a rating or review or sharing it with someone who you think may enjoy it is a huge help and goes a long way. See you next week.